Hello and welcome to the Island Library Podcast. I'm Laura from Laura Liz Buckley.
And I'm Jo from Pages of the Moon.
And this week is another book club episode, which is always good fun.
Woohoo!
So, in the month of June, we read Pride and Premeditation by Tears of Price, which is a kind of particular take on a retelling of Pride and Prejudice, but we'll get into details in a moment. The way that our book club episodes work is I'll read the blurb, we'll take turns to pitch the book, and then we'll just dive straight into chatting about what we thought of it. And then to finish up, we've got some questions from our lovely book club members, so we will go through those as well and talk about our thoughts in response to those. So the blurb for Pride and Premeditation: when a scandalous murder shocks London high society, 16-year-old law enthusiast Lizzie Bennett sees the perfect opportunity to prove herself as a formidable litigator, despite the fact that women are only allowed in court as witnesses. Unfortunately for Lizzie, the man accused of the crime already has a fledgling lawyer, Mr. Fitzwilliam Darcy, the stern young heir training to take over the prestigious firm Pemberley & Associates. Convinced the authorities have blamed the wrong person, Lizzie vows to steal Darcy's client and solve the murder so that she can earn a position of her own. But as the case and her feelings for Darcy become more complicated, Lizzie discovers that her dream job could make her happy, but it might also get her killed. Dun, dun, dun.
Very, very dramatic.
So, do you want to give us your pitch?
Yeah. So my pitch is very close to the blurb that you've just read, because it's quite hard to not ruin this kind of book. So, Lizzie Bennett is desperate to be a lawyer, but as a woman in the 19th century, this is near impossible. However, that doesn't stop Lizzie. When a murder occurs, shocking London, Lizzie believes this is the perfect chance to show her father exactly what she can bring to the table. The only problem is Darcy, the hotshot heir to the Pemberley Associates law firm, who has already been assigned to work for the defendant. What becomes a desperation to prove herself quickly becomes something more sinister and deeply woven in London high society, which Lizzie discovers can get her killed.
Mm. You and I started our pitches with the exact same sentence.
That's amazing. Just because we're so in sync.
We are crazy in sync. So, my pitch: Lizzie Bennett is desperate to be a lawyer. If only she could convince her father, senior partner at Longbourn & Sons, to take a chance on her and stop the odious Mr. Collins from stealing her credit at every turn. An unexpected opportunity arises when Lizzie learns of a murder. The suspect, Mr. Bingley, already has representation in the form of the terribly proud Mr. Darcy. But if Lizzie can find the true murderer, she knows people will sit up and take notice. But as the case grows more dangerous, Lizzie realises that more than her reputation is on the line. Is proving herself worth the risk? And can she solve the case before the perpetrator has her silenced?
I actually much prefer yours than the blurb.
Thank you.
Yeah, it actually gets across, I think, a bit more of the actual tone of the book than the blurb does.
Yeah, I think both of us were pretty close to the blurb. I know sometimes in our pitches we take a very different angle on the story, but like you said, with a murder mystery, there's kind of not much that you can say about kind of... There's not much that you can indicate about stuff that might come up without potentially stepping on stuff that's really closely linked to the mystery and the developments that come as that is investigated. But yeah, I think partly the blurb talks about her feelings for Darcy in a way.
Yeah, I don't agree with that.
I kind of wanted to steer away from, which we'll definitely talk about this, because it was something that came up a lot in the book club, and I know it's definitely something that we had some feelings about.
Jo's favourite word came back during the book club. I might actually try and get it copyrighted.
So this is going to have to be island merch, right?
Yeah, definitely. Want a smush?
Just anything with the word smush in big capitals. So I guess we should talk about what we thought of it. I mean, I feel like I'm going to end up talking about a lot of negatives about the book. So I do want to say up front that I did really enjoy it. It might not sound like that once we get into the discussion, because I think it had some flaws. But it was a quick read. It was really entertaining. I found it a really easy read. And yeah, it was fun. But...
Yeah, I thought the pacing was really well handled and the plot continuously remained quite balanced. Obviously, I've got a slightly different perspective, which I'll touch on in a second. And I did think that things were explained somewhat well for someone who doesn't know Pride and Prejudice. And I could follow along really, really well because I'm coming at this from the direction that I have no prior knowledge of Pride and Prejudice. I have not read the book. I have not watched a single film yet.
This continues to baffle me.
Yeah, we're trying to change that. Laura has worn me down enough to the point that I am going to watch one of the films. And I think I'm doing better to get in touch with the classics. So I came to this with some expectations and some knowledge about just from other people discussing this book. So I'll touch on that a little bit later when Laura touches on them, because obviously Laura is a huge fan of the book. So her feelings are going to be a little bit more emotive than mine. But I agree. I found it really quick. I actually only read it in several hours. So that's how quick and digestible this book is. And it was fun. Obviously, like I said, it didn't take me that long to get through. I didn't find it overtly challenging to read, which is always nice. I actually found it as quite a nice palate cleanser is the way I would best describe my thoughts on reading this book.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think that's fair. God, it's kind of hard to know in some ways where to start. I'm going to talk a bit about the characters, I think. And it will be interesting because obviously, like you said, Jo, my feelings about the characters in this book are partly coloured by my feelings about the characters in the original. And as much as I have tried to kind of keep them separate and judge Pride and Premeditation on its own merits, I'm also kind of aware that part of what made it so fun for me was seeing characters I loved in a different setting. So it did it favours, as well as also potentially leading to a comparison that wasn't necessarily to its advantage. So I thought the way the characters were used was fun. I felt like some of the characters got a bit diluted, particularly Darcy. I liked him in this book, but I feel like he got toned down a lot from the kind of original Pride and Prejudice version. And we also didn't get much of the development of the relationship between Lizzie and Darcy. So both the initial antagonism between them seemed a lot milder in Pride and Premeditation, and the kind of thawing of that didn't happen over the same kind of time frame. It didn't get the same kind of attention. Now, obviously, Pride and Premeditation is a murder mystery, and Pride and Prejudice is a romance, so there's a massive genre difference that will have affected the way the relationship was explored. So that, you know, I don't necessarily hold that against it, but it part of me was kind of missing that dynamic, the way they absolutely get each other wrong at the beginning, and then come to understand each other through various circumstances. I missed that, I think. Also, while I liked Lizzie in Pride and Premeditation, I liked her drive and her determination. The original Lizzie isn't at all sneaky. She's really straightforward, so it was kind of weird to see her sneaking around and, you know, trying to use subtlety to uncover stuff. That sort of isn't really in the nature of the Lizzie Bennet of Pride and Prejudice, I don't think.
So obviously I don't have any like prior knowledge of these characters other than occasionally seeing a Keira Knightley clip every now and again, all hail the queen that is Keira. But even like touching on your point about it already being a murder mystery, I feel like the book could have been a touch longer just to incorporate that romance and not obviously affect the plot that's already brilliantly executed, because the murder mystery was well done.
Absolutely.
It was handled really well. It was slightly predictable, but I don't know if that's just because I'm going at this as an older reader, and maybe it was just me being the sneaky sleuth that I am that was like, oh, I know who the killer is. Obviously, I didn't get some of the twists, but I think they were slightly more obvious to some of our readers who had already read Pride and Prejudice because they knew who the big baddies were, so to speak, in the original book, and obviously I didn't. So that one did catch me by surprise. But the romance, again, I just thought was just a little bit bland, especially to the point that it's in the blurb. Like, the blurb says Lizzie and Darcy are developing feelings for each other. And I really didn't get that vibe until this one particular scene, which was very short. There was no smosh, which, you know, I was upset about. But also, the reason Pride and Prejudice is such a well-known book is because of its romance. It's like, it's constantly being remade as a television show because the romance is just so, like, brilliant. So to not give it a nice nod to that just felt like a bit of a disservice to saying this is a retelling. Because while you're giving it a new genre, this is where I started to feel a bit, and this is no discredit to fanfiction writers. I was a fanfiction writer and I still love fanfiction even now. But it felt very fanfiction-esque because it felt very thin in places, especially with that romance. And in sometimes how the characters interacted with each other, as if, because when you read fanfiction, you already know that world very well and you already know the characters. So you just, you can forget those little things, those little nods to the characters and the world and the setting up of them. But for like, for someone like myself who's never read Pride and Prejudice, I found that really hard because I didn't know, okay, is Lizzie always like this? And is Darcy always like this? I don't know. And, you know, where are we actually set most of the time? Like, I've got a generalised idea of what I think it looks like, but there's not anything very specific because it's sort of expecting you to understand the original text. And that's not something some readers are going to have behind them, especially if people have just watched the film, for example, and not read the book. I mean, I've read none, so that's fantastic. But yeah, again, I know we've said this right at the beginning, like we did enjoy the book, but I think there could have been a bit more work done to develop, even extend the book by 100 pages to add that romance in and add that development of those characters, I think would have made this book so much better.
Yeah, there definitely felt like there was a lack of character growth or character development. And again, not to hark back constantly to Pride and Prejudice, but one, I've just reread Pride and Prejudice this week actually, because I want, having read this, I wanted to go back and read the original again. And the way that the characters grow over the course of the book is really lovely. There would, I don't think, again, you know, this is a murder mystery. I know it's trying to do something different, but I think perhaps, like you said, it leaned a little bit too much on readers who are familiar with the characters and know that they change the way they look at the world over the course of the story, rather than actually making the effort to make that happen in its own world as well.
Yeah, like I think a good example of this was somebody that we discussed in the book club was a character. I know there's a few other characters and I'm gonna let you take the wheel on those ones because I don't know them very well, but it was like the mum is completely different in the original text, and it was thankfully the members and yourself who was able to give me that background on the mum, because I just thought she was being really difficult in the book because I don't think she was handled as well as she could have been, to the point that I was like, okay, what is her issue? And then then you all told me it. I was like, oh my God, okay, this makes more sense as to why she's like that. And it's those little disconnects you will have if you've not read Pride and Prejudice. And some of the other members, and I think yourself, was quite passionate about some of the sisters as well, that felt very background and that people wish they were a bit more forefront. And I know other reviewers have felt the same, especially as those who have come from reading that original text.
Yeah, it's interesting. The mum was definitely tweaked in Pride and Premeditation to kind of fit a specific thing. And, you know, I wouldn't necessarily say that she's less annoying in Pride and Prejudice, but she definitely, I think you understand her a bit better. And yeah, the sisters were a big loss in some ways. The younger sisters basically didn't show up at all. They were functionally irrelevant. They could have just been cut. Whereas Lydia in particular is hugely important in the original. And while I didn't necessarily expect the exact same things to play out, because I knew that Pride and Premeditation was going to have to make some pretty substantial changes to the storyline, but I definitely was expecting, I don't know, I guess an attempt to maintain the importance of some of the characters who play really crucial roles, and to have Lydia functionally not in the story felt like a shame, because she's so much fun as well. And she's a nightmare. She makes a lot of trouble intentionally or unintentionally. But yeah, I definitely felt like I missed her presence in this book, and that was something that a couple of people had felt, I think. And when we were talking in the book club, it was definitely one of the, when we asked who deserves a Justice Award, Justice for Lydia was up there, I think. But also for Jane, who is, for people who aren't necessarily familiar with either book, so Lizzie Bennet is kind of the protagonist. She's got an older sister, Jane, who's very sweet, very lovely. And then she's got three younger sisters. So there's Mary, who is the middle daughter and is very very fond of her education. She is very serious. And then there's Lydia and Kitty, who are the younger ones and are very silly and boy crazy and just want to flirt with everything that moves, particularly anything in a soldier's uniform.
Woohoo!
Exactly. That is exactly them. And yeah, Jane and Lizzie are really close, and they are kind of the two most reasonable sisters, and they really have each other's back, and it's absolutely lovely, the relationship that they have. And there were definitely elements of that in Pride and Premeditation, but a fairly substantial part of Jane's story in Pride and Prejudice is her relationship with Bingley. Now, obviously, Bingley is introduced very early in Pride and Premeditation because he's the murder suspect.
Dum, dum, dum.
And Lizzie's trying to clear his name. And I was like, oh, I wonder how Jane and Bingley are going to meet. Well, they don't.
No, it becomes a very, like, a quick sentence roundup. And again, like, I'm not bad talking fan fiction because I wouldn't be where I am without it. And it is, like, such a special part of my heart. Mm. But the last chapter, or even like sort of the last roundup page of Pride and Premeditation, really read like that bonus chapter that you get at the end of a really long fan fiction. That's sort of like, oh yeah, this is like 5 years in the future. This is whatever. This is where everybody is. And it was like a short sentence of just going, and Jane and Bingley were like in the other room. And I was like, oh, okay, that's a cool story. And then everyone at the book club was like, I can't believe like we didn't get to see their blossoming romance. And I was like, oh, I didn't even realise it was meant to be that big of a deal. It's like a sentence.
And it's also, it's kind of one of those things where if it wasn't trying to claim ties to Pride and Prejudice, then it wouldn't have had that nod at all. And it wouldn't have suffered for it because it was not relevant. It was only in there to satisfy readers who would have been like, what about Jane and Bingley? And then the author's like, oh, don't worry, they're going to get together in this version.
Yeah, that's it. I think that's it. I think it leans, as you said so eloquently earlier, it leans too far away from the original text, even though it keeps saying it's a retelling, and it's not a retelling, it's a borrowing. I think if it was marketed as a borrowing of Pride and Prejudice, it borrows the characters and borrows that familiarity, that the flaws might not be so large. Whereas because for a lot of the members at the book club, it was told as a retelling, it was so far away removed from a retelling that there were things that people were like, well, where's this? Where's that? And then it kind of felt a little bit thin because of that.
Yeah, and I think it sort of suffers on both counts because obviously for those of us who read it kind of anticipating it to hew a bit closer to the original story, obviously with the full awareness that it would have to make substantial changes, it felt like, okay, but it's not, like you said, it's not really a retelling. It's taken the characters and completely changed their entire circumstance, and then it's got the odd line in there as kind of a nod to the original. And you know, if that had been, like you said, if that had been a bit clearer going in, then it might have affected the way that we felt about it coming out. But also, it was close enough and borrowed enough, and therefore felt that it didn't need to explain those things, that people like you, who read it without having that prior knowledge, were like, I don't, but who are these characters? What are they like? Where is this set? What is going on?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, when I first met Bingley, I didn't know that he was, I didn't even know he was in the original text. Mm. I just thought he was just some guy that was told of a murder until the book club, and then everyone was going, oh no, he gets with Jane, and I was like, oh okay, oh he's a big character. And yeah, I had no idea, because you definitely don't get that feel in the book.
This is a thing that I thought was interesting that the author did. So Charlotte, who in the original Pride and Prejudice is a close friend of Lizzie's, in Pride and Premeditation the author made her biracial. So her dad was, I guess, a white English merchant, and then her mother was from the West Indies. So I thought that was interesting in the sense that it's tricky with retellings to have a diverse cast, because when you're taking something like Pride and Prejudice, where the characters are pretty clearly all white, you have to decide, am I going to stick to that, or am I going to try and introduce some diversity? So I kind of appreciate the effort in that sense, but I felt like it felt a little bit like a token effort. Like, there was a couple of lines that vaguely gestured towards the issues that she would face as a person of colour in Regency-era England, but it felt very brushed over in a way that made me think, I don't know if this is helpful to anybody at this point, or if it's literally just to say that you've done it. I don't want to criticize necessarily, and I don't know how people of color reading it felt about it, but I know that when I read that, I was like, oh, that's really interesting. I wonder what's going to happen with that. And the answer was very little. It was just kind of referenced once or twice, very much in passing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it also like did a really good job of highlighting that straight away and then bringing it up only when it served her struggle, which again, like what you said, we're both white, so we don't know how it feels to have read that. But it felt like if you were going to bring it up, it was going to serve a bigger part for Charlotte, and we were going to see more of Charlotte. And she didn't come up all that much for saying you were introducing this new plot point. And then the thread kind of felt like it was just dangling there and it wasn't actioned on enough. Mm. It only really served to bring friction between Lizzie, Charlotte and Collins. And I don't know if that was necessarily the right move. But I agree with you. I just think if you're going to as well have Charlotte comment on her struggles that she faces, you've got to show up more than you have done in the book for Charlotte.
One thing that I know a lot of people commented on after reading this, so the author's note admits that, you know, she's taken some liberties with what would or would not have been possible or proper in Regency era England. I could suspend my disbelief pretty happily for some of the stuff, like Lizzie wanting to be a lawyer, and that would not really have been feasible by any stretch of the imagination at that stage. That bit didn't bother me, but there were some bits where, like, the use of language felt a bit jarring. It felt a little bit too modern, which isn't necessarily a problem, but then every so often the author would drop in a line of dialogue straight from Pride and Prejudice, which was kind of fun, but also made a really stark contrast because that actually was written in that time.
Yeah.
So it might have been nice if she'd maybe modernised those lines, if she was going with, well, the characters speak the way we speak now. Because, like, I've read books where they kind of do that. It's sort of set in that time, but because it's kind of making a point of, well, the way they spoke then felt completely natural to them in the same way that the way we speak. So does this make any sense?
Yeah, like, I'm getting what you're saying. It was jarring, even for somebody who hasn't read the original text. I was like, it's a bit like watching, it's one of my favourite films, but it's like watching the Leonardo DiCaprio Romeo and Juliet. You see them all and they've got guns and it's like AK-47s and like really modern cars, and yet they talk, Romeo, Romeo, where art thou? And it's really jarring because it's like two things coming together that don't really mesh very well. And in the book, she's there like, you expect at certain moments for her to whip out her flip phone, because yeah, like she's so modern and just so aware, and then the next minute she like just drops a 19th century line. You're like, have you read a lot of books? Is that what this is? Have you found a quote that you just want to like throw around all the time? It was, yeah, even for myself, I was a bit like, huh?
Yeah. the mystery side of it was, I think we've touched on this, was it was really well paced.
Yeah.
To be fair, I enjoyed the way that it kind of unraveled. But it was very predictable.
Yeah.
I'm not going to talk about too many specifics, but I wondered, and this came up in the book club, whether part of the reason it was predictable was because if you've read Pride and Prejudice, you know who kind of the antagonists are, I guess. So it was like, okay, well, presumably they're involved, because what, you're not going to make one of the heroes of Pride and Prejudice into a murderer, right? Unless you're just going to introduce a new character to be the murderer, in which case that'll be really obvious because it'll stand out for being the only character who's not in Pride and Prejudice. But then when we brought it up in the book club, Jo, I think you said that you found it really easy to guess as well.
Yeah, so the way I got it when I was reading it was the author made it really obvious who was good and who was bad. And you get this vibe, and you can literally sense the creepiness of the characters you're not meant to trust. And you're meant to obviously like gravitate towards other characters, and the characters that were very suspicious, you're very suspicious of from the get-go. So as things start to unravel and people are showing up in particular places and doing particular things, you're going to be like, okay, this is what this is. I was only thrown by one character, but as we discussed it at the book club and I explained this, I say I don't want to ruin it for anyone who's looking to pick it up, But apparently that character is very suspicious in the original text, so most of the people who had read the original knew that she was not going to be like a good person. That was the only character that really threw me. But also, yeah, like the handling of that character when it did come out, I was a bit like, this is baffling, like what is this situation? But just a little bit predictable, but paced well, and it was quite a balanced plot. Like, it developed in a nice way where the tension does build up, even if you do know who it is, and you're getting excited to find out if they're going to get their comeuppance. And also, I thought it was really nice the way that that was handled, in that we weren't waiting too long. I mean, it wasn't too short. It was the perfect amount of time before they got their comeuppance. Some got their comeuppance. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, for sure.
I just want to touch on one more thing before I forget. The one thing, I didn't do this research before reading Pride and Premeditation. I did quite a bit of research into the series as a whole, because this actually is going to be a series. And I was a little bit disappointed to find out that the second book is not continuing on with Pride and Prejudice, and it's going to be Sense and Sensibility. And I say this because if you're going to pick it up, I want you to be aware of that when you're going into it, because for me, there were things that even without the original text, I wished for more of. And I know I always want a smush and I always want a bit more romance, but that's because I'm a romance writer and reader. That's what I gravitate towards. It's what makes me happy. But I kind of thought at the end of it, oh, in the next book, this will get picked up and there'll be like a crime fighting duo and it'll be great. And I thought that would be such an interesting series. However, then I found out that the next book is actually not any of those characters, and it's going to be the characters from Sense and Sensibility. Mm. And I did find that a little bit disappointing. It's not affected my overall opinion of the book, but it has made me a bit more wary about reading the rest of the series, because, again, I've not read any of the other works either. Like, the last classic and the only classic I have read is Little Women. So I am of no use or ornament to this book series. But I just want, for people who might go into this thinking, oh, okay, the next book will at least get this better developed, you're not going to, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think that's a really fair point. And definitely, I agree, when I finished Pride and Premeditation, knowing, like you did, that this was a series, I thought, okay, well, it'd be really interesting to see how she develops these romances or these relationships or these characters moving forwards, because I'd love to see somebody take the characters as they were in this version and show us how they grow from here, and, you know, how Lizzie goes on trying to prove herself in her career, and that could have been really fun. But then when it turned out that actually, although it's a series, it's going to be that they're going to be kind of standalone stories, that felt a bit disappointing. There's also and I obviously want to avoid spoilers, but one character got a very interesting take.
Yes.
And I was like, wild, are we going to see more of them or what they get up to? I have to assume not. So that made it feel a bit more random, whereas it would have been a really fun jumping off point for them to continue to be a presence in the series. So yeah, I agree that that is an important one to raise. So okay, like, my overall thoughts were, you know, it was a fun book, not all that memorable, but definitely enjoyable while I was reading it. It was kind of too predictable to be a great mystery, and too distant from Pride and Prejudice to be completely satisfying to diehard fans of the original, but still an enjoyable read. I'm still glad that I read it, and I agree with what you said earlier about it being a good palate cleanser.
Yeah, so I thought Lizzie was really charming. She was quite interesting. The bones that were set for her were definitely pulling me in. I wish I'd had a little bit more development for her, just because I'm not familiar with the original text, but I was really glad that for a main character she wasn't annoying, because sometimes main characters that are female tend to be a little bit more on the irritating side, especially at the beginning. I thought it was really quick, easy to digest, it was fun, it was different, and I thought the mystery element of it was handled really, really well. Maybe a little bit too well in places, but overall really still enjoyable. However, I'm going to try and probably tie my two things together, just because they kind of jump off each other. So I'm going to ask Laura first what her seashell rating is before I take the wheel.
I think in the book club I went for 3.5 shells. I might downgrade that to a 3. I did enjoy it. it didn't blow me away. And particularly since rereading the original, I think I kind of felt like, I kind of wish it had just been a murder mystery without necessarily trying to, I don't know. But yeah, it's tricky. I'm torn between 3 and 3.5.
That's fine. That's fine. Would you take it to your island library?
I would not. No. I'd sooner take the original.
Yeah. So I also, I think, originally said 3 out of 5 in the book club. And I've actually come away and thought about it a little bit more. And while I would really like to give it a 2.5, even for myself, I am going to still stick with the 3 because I did really enjoy elements of the book. I thought it was well written. Like I said, I thought the pacing was really well handled. The plot overall, over the course of the book, moved smoothly. There was no overtly jarring moments within the plot itself, although if there were any, that could also be because I don't know the characters, and mainly that was where I kept stumbling, was my lack of connection with the characters, because I don't have that. However, which ties into, would I take it to the island library? As much as I enjoyed it, I don't think I'm ever going to read this again.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'm going to pick it up. I don't even think, as much as it was a palate cleanser in between all the other books we've been reading at the time, it's something that I'm like, okay, I've read it, I'm kind of done with it. There were a lot of things that worked really, really well within the book. There were a few like stumbling blocks, which were mainly characters for myself because I don't know the characters. So I settled on a 3 out of 5. But as much as I enjoyed it, which now answers my would I take it to the island question, I don't think I'm going to read it ever again or probably pick it up. So it won't be coming with me.
I think that's fair.
I don't know if the original text will come with me because I haven't read it yet.
So I think we can wrap up then on our book club questions. Some of them are kind of more for one particularly. So the first one was, what moments did you want to see in this book from the original? So I think I've kind of covered that already in some of what I've said. I wanted to see, if I had to pick out a specific moment, I think the biggest loss for me was there's a moment where Darcy gives Lizzie a letter that explains a lot of stuff. And her reading that and kind of the way that it affects how she's understood him and the situation is really, really interesting. And we didn't get anything like that, really. So if I had to pick a single moment, it might be that one. So then the next question, do you need to have read the original book to enjoy this story? I have kind of mixed feelings on that front. Joe, what do you think as someone who hasn't read the original?
I'm torn because half of me thinks you shouldn't have to. But the other half of me has some very strong feelings on this, and the fact that I think you would need to because the characters are so thin and the expectation is that you know these characters if you're going to pick up this book, that you're going to be confused, because most of my confusion came from not knowing the characters, the location, or what the hell was going off with the other characters in the background, because they literally floated in and floated straight back out. Like her dad, I didn't understand if he was meant to be a big part in the book or not, because he sort of came in, had an opinion and left, but she spent so much of her time wanting to prove herself to him that I was like, is this a running theme, or is this in the original, is this her seeking her own independence? It's hard. The lines are slightly blurred within Pride and Premeditation that I feel like, to get a great understanding of what the author's trying to do, it might be worth reading Pride and Prejudice. But then you're asking someone to commit to reading 2 books, which I think is quite cheeky, really.
The next question, which kind of I think follows on from that really nicely, is, does it make you want to read the original?
Not really. I think it does a slight disservice to the original text because the intrigue was there when I first started it, and then the intrigue quickly went off because I'm like, well, I now know the key players and what sort of, who's the antagonists. And also just from like prior knowledge of certain things, I'm like, okay, well, now do I even need to read it? Because you've given me this retelling, but then is the retelling doing a disservice to the original? Even as somebody who hasn't read it, I definitely think that they are. So it kind of taints the original a little bit. And as somebody who needs coercing to read classics, it's not made me want to pick it up. I will do for the foundation of my friendship with Laura, because I love her dearly. But this book has not coerced me to think, oh, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to definitely delve into all of her works now.
Yeah.
No offence to the author, but it's just that element of it. The murder mystery, you smashed. Like, I thought you did such a great job. It's just, I don't feel any connection to the characters. And then the one connection I was waiting for was the romance, and it didn't happen. So I'm like, well, now I'm a bit like, okay, do I have much point in reading P&P? I know I do, but that's how I felt.
Yeah, it made me want to go back and reread the original because there was so much of the original missing from Pride and Premeditation. And I don't think that that would have to be an unforgivable flaw because, as we've said over and over again, it is trying to do something different. But I think one of the things that's really exciting about reading a retelling that takes an original story in such a different direction is seeing how certain plot points and characters are changed to still echo the original. And it didn't feel like there was as much of that as I would have liked. So rather than getting to read Pride and Premeditation and feel like, oh, that's the version that they've gone with of this particular moment. Oh, that's how that relationship's been changed to kind of still be in the spirit of the original but fit into this new genre. It just felt like, oh, these are the characters doing completely different things and behaving slightly differently than they normally would.
I think that's the other thing as well. Like, I know that you obviously have mentioned it, that the characters behave differently in this book, but that also kind of does a disservice to anyone who's not read the original text, because I was just like, okay, so what is her deal? Like, what is her agenda here? And then Darcy came in and I was like, I don't get him. I get he's meant to have such a huge presence, and I get that even from the Keira Knightley snippets I've seen, and that doesn't really come across all that well. And obviously, like I said, Bingley, I didn't even know he was going to be a character. I just saw someone that was made him up.
There's also the fact that, and this, I didn't massively object to this, but I think it, again, is just another way that the romance, I think, didn't make it across into this book. So in Pride and Premeditation, Lizzie seems to be kind of attracted to Darcy before she likes him. And then the way her feelings evolve over the book support the romance such as it is. In Pride and Prejudice, that is not the case. And it's not like a massive deal, but it felt like the author had completely taken away the core element of their relationship, which is that she kind of can't stand him at first. It's one of the definitive enemies to lovers stories. And while Lizzie seems to find him annoying in Pride and Premeditation and see him as an obstacle, there's that kind of attraction to him or appreciation of the way he looks. I guess it doesn't matter that much, but it kind of makes it less about what their relationship is meant to be about, which is them getting each other completely wrong and having to like undo their pre-existing views before they can see a way forward to actually liking each other.
Yeah, and it could have just done with another 100 pages, like just woven in of just getting that, because I think if you got the same feel for their romance that you do in the original, it would have made it so much better. Like, it wouldn't have done a disservice to the book. People would have happily read another 100 pages of that romance in this context. Even if you turned it up from, I would say it's like 15% the book is on romance, and the other like 20% is her desperately trying to prove herself, and then the rest of the book is the mystery. That if you dialed that up to 30%, dropped her agenda for independence a little bit, and then still carried the same weight of the mystery, you would appease everybody then, and it wouldn't feel as thin in places, because it does, unfortunately. You don't connect with them, and you don't really care as you should until a certain moment where you think, oh, okay, he actually doesn't dislike her. And she spends most of her time going, oh, he's quite chiseled.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, we get it. You're a horn dog.
The next question was, were there any modernizations that didn't work or any jarring moments? Which I think we've talked a little bit about in terms of some of the dialogue felt out of place modern, which I would have been more okay with if they'd just committed to modernizing all of the language and making that a feature of the book rather than having the odd line that was completely Regency and some of it being like, that's how I talk.
I think another jarring moment, which kind of bothered me at the time, but more so after the book club, after the discussions, was how right at the end, Darcy and Lizzie are left in a room together. And for saying you've built up an entire book on the fact that, you know, she literally can't really breathe without someone's permission, to then just let her be in a room. And I think she kisses him It came out of
nowhere. I think they do kiss at the end, and it's like, considering they... it's weird, the things that were made not proper and the things that they were like, oh no, it's fine, this is fine.
There's a whole scene where Lizzie goes to like this... I know it's not, but to me, as somebody who doesn't know the original, it's like an underground meet and greet for people to meet a spouse. That's what it read as. I know it's not, but that's how it read to me. And it's like, you can only go with a date, and you've got to be like invited, and it's so proper, and you know, you really can't be by yourself. And then right at the end, it's like, well, close the door, come on, Darcy. And it's like, okay, your mum is very strict on certain things, and yet she's just suddenly so okay about this. It's just a bit odd. Just a bit.
Yeah. And then our final question, does the retelling make the original story more accessible to a modern audience?
I don't know. I don't think so, because I'm more baffled than I was going into it. So I don't know if it's technically done what it was meant to do. I guess.
Yeah, I think probably not, mostly because
my stellar reactions.
Partly, yeah. I think because it diverts quite a lot from the original, partly in ways that it had to, partly in ways that I think we agree it would have been nice if it hadn't. I don't think it sets somebody up with a framework for better understanding the original, which is what I think you'd want it to do. If you're trying to make something more accessible, and to be clear, I don't think the author was necessarily trying to make the original more accessible. I don't think that's what she set out to do. But a story that explained more for readers who maybe hadn't read the original about why some of these things are important and why some of these, you know, limitations existed the way that they did. Like, maybe that could have made the original story more accessible to a modern audience, because people might go into the original being like, okay, I feel like I already have a sense of why some of these things work the way they do, and now I can kind of bring that knowledge to the original and it will make more intuitive sense. I don't think this would have done that at all. If anything, it's going to leave people more confused.
Like I.
Yeah. I read, it was one of the podcast reads in season one, I believe. I read Pride, which is by Ibi Zoboi, and is... similarly, it's kind of a retelling, but it's a modernization, so it's actually set in the present day. And I think a story like that does make Pride and Prejudice more accessible to a modern audience, because it takes some of those relationships and tries to translate them to our current understanding of the world. This, because it was set in the same time, but taking a lot of historical liberties and also drastically changing the genre, I don't see anybody reading Pride and Premeditation and then being like, oh, I feel more equipped to understand Pride and Prejudice now.
No.
But it's still so worth doing.
It was fun, though. I know we spent a lot of the time talking about some of the things that didn't really work, but it is hard to talk about a mystery without ruining it.
Yeah.
So please take that into consideration. Like, we still did rate it 3, which for us on the island, as our seashell rating, means that we did enjoy it.
Yeah.
So just take that into consideration. There are flawed moments of it, and if you are a big P&P lover, it might be worth going in with these awarenesses, because you might actually enjoy it more. Like, obviously, we did go into this knowing these things, and if mm-hmm. we did, it might have changed our entire reading experience. So we're actually doing you a favour.
No, absolutely. I know I said this right at the beginning, but I do think it's worth repeating. I did enjoy this book. It might sound like I didn't, because I have had a lot of constructive criticism for it, but I was always going to have really strong opinions on it because I do love Pride and Prejudice so much. And I agree with what you just said. I think if you know going into it that what you're going to get is slightly different versions of those characters having the kind of adventure that they would never have actually had in the world of the original, then, you know, it's good fun. It's a bit silly at points. It requires you to not think too hard about some of the historical things in it, but it's a really good fun read, and, you know, it rattles along at a really decent pace, and you do come to the end and you're like, that felt like it took no time at all and no trouble at all to read.
Yeah, definitely. Also, we're a book reviewing podcast, so sometimes we're not gonna sing all of the praises. And that's okay too, because that's why you listen. You want our objective opinion. You want us to be honest.
We try to take a reasonably objective view of the books we read.
Exactly. But because obviously you're desperate for more bookish content in between our episodes, I think you should follow us on Instagram at the Ireland Library Podcast, where you'll see amazing pictures of books and snippets.
I also highly recommend checking us out on Twitter, where we are at the Ireland Lib Pod.
Which is my favourite at handle ever. And also, what else can you be doing on normally the fourth or fifth Sunday of every month, if not joining a wicked podcast book club by us two, because we're amazing. And I think you should go to www.theislandlibrary.com and check that out and click the book club tab and find out what we're reading. You can either read along with us, which is amazing, or you can join the book club and join the discussions, also amazing, or you can just see what we're reading and just interact with us, also amazing. Please do all of it if you want.
We so appreciate all of our book club members and everybody who supports us on Patreon, or anybody who listens and shares. We make this for you lot, and we hope that you enjoy it as much as we do.
Yeah, we have a great time. I hope you can actually hear that in all of the episodes, because it's my favourite thing when I hear them back. It's just, you can hear how much fun we have. Thank you so much for sitting with us again. Laura, my beautiful co-host, thank you for letting me into your home.
Thank you for recording with me once again.
And I'll see you next time.
See you next time.
Bye. Bye. You want our is it objective or unobjective? What's the
objective
word? Objective opinion.